podcast listeners. This is Matt Plughoff. Thank you for listening to the Thank You Note, where we're talking about sales and customer service and performance. Really exemplary guest today, somebody that I've known for probably the better part of 10 years. And we came across each other initially while living and working in Arizona. And our careers took separate paths at some point. But recently, she won a really important award. And I called her immediately, or I guess I messaged her immediately, and congratulated her, because in the heating and air conditioning industry, outside sales, you know, every year, all the major companies celebrate their top performers, people that have just really killed their numbers and all the key metrics. But more importantly, or you know, in addition to that, have a character and an ethic, a work ethic, a disposition that contributes to the greater whole. So, you know, it's both a qualitative and a quantitative consideration. And when my guest today won that, you know, I stepped back and said, gee, many Christmas, I've known her for a long time when she was managing programs, and left that role, came back, and now is just really on top of her game. And I think there's a lot to learn from that journey. I know she's got some fantastic insights into her success and recommendations that she can make to folks that, you know, want to attain that level of top performance. So it's a huge pleasure to welcome my friend Felicia Simmons to the podcast. Good afternoon, Felicia.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad, actually. I'm drinking white tea. Ever tried this stuff?
Yes, I have.
Have you really?
Is there a flavor? Like, is it peach?
It's kind of got plain? A fruity white tea flavor to it. Absolutely. There's definitely some kind of fruit flavor to it. But it's delicious.
Good.
What brought you to white tea?
I love tea, actually. I try them all the time. I'm always trying to find healthy stuff to either help with digestion or skin or whatever.
Yeah.
I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
So tea, I probably have an entire shelf in my pantry full of tea right now.
I'm told, maybe you've been hip to this as well, that white tea also has some kind of neurological advantages. It does something to help synaptic functions in the brain or something like that. Have you?
Yes.
Is that true?
I've heard that.
Oh, you have?
Yes, I've heard it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm good. It's cold up here. Is it warming up down there?
It is. Actually, today is pretty mild. It's like only 77 out, but it had gotten pretty darn hot. It was up to 98 degrees the other day.
Oh,
so we're warming up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But still in the desert, that's the perfect temperature. Like 90 degrees.
Right.
No, I mean, that is like literally the perfect temperature.
Yes.
So thank you for your time. I really want to again say thank you for, I know you're super busy, but sharing some insights with us today.
Oh yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, let's go back a little bit, and this is how I typically like to start these interviews. You know, even before you and I worked together, all of us, you know, you and I, everybody in the trades finds their way into heating, air conditioning in very different manners, right, in their own unique ways. And some people come in through a trade school. Some people want to learn a skill, and this is where they choose to start. We've known people with very, very different backgrounds that have come into the HVAC world and have had terrific careers. So, you know, from your standpoint, what brought you to the trades? And, you know, what lessons did you learn along the way?
Well, I kind of fell into it. My dad was an AC contractor. He owned a company in the town that I grew up in. And when I was going to college, his company was part of the Home Depot program. Mm. And I was going to college up at ASU in Tempe. And I grew up in a smaller town. It was about 45 minutes away from Tempe. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, I need a job. Why don't you hire me to be an appointment generator in Home Depot? And
sure.
He's like, you need to stay up there. Like, I was on a scholarship. So he's like, you need to stay up there and focus on school. He's like, mm-hmm. Stop coming home. I was having a hard time leaving my family. So
yeah.
He's like, let me reach out to some of the other AC contractors up there and see if maybe they need somebody because there's people in the program up there. And so he reached out and I interviewed with a couple, and I found one that just really worked with my school schedule, and that's got into it. And I, you know, growing up around his AC business, I didn't really understand it, but I heard a lot from him and I learned a lot about what he did and how he treated his customers. And I really took away a lot. Like, I just remember him always telling his employees, when you go into that home, you treat those people the way you would treat your mother and how you would, you know, take care of her home. And that really just always stuck with me. I just always remember hearing him say that and just seeing how hard he worked. I mean, he was just a grinder. He would work 10, 12, 15 hour days. But his business was successful. It was a really, you know, great opportunity for our family.
Wow.
So I kind of fell into it that way. I didn't grow up thinking I was going to be in the AC industry, but it's really worked out.
A lot of people say that. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But going to college, I wasn't like, oh yeah, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to go into AC sales.
Right.
I was really kind of fumbling along in college, and I got to the point where you had to pick a major, and I said, okay, what major is there that there's no more math and no more science? I want to do that one.
How about poetry?
So I just knew, like, I was great at talking and I loved working with people. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know what I wanted to do, and my career path just kind of fell into place over the past, you know, 15 years.
Can I ask you a sidebar question? Because I knew that your father had a business. I didn't know that was your point of entry. But listening to you describe growing up with a dad, a really hardworking dad in the trades, clearly you've acquired, you know, a different perspective, right? A really empathetic perspective on that, because you lived it and you watched your dad live it, and clearly you picked up the lessons that he was coaching his team around. So right now, as a professional business to business salesperson, do you think that having been raised with a contracting father, that that kind of empathy makes you a better salesperson?
It does. It does. And I feel like I have to remind sometimes my leadership team and say, hey, remember when you were a TM, or think about if you were actually that contractor and you own that company, because I grew up in that and I saw that. And I can still ask my dad questions about that. And he'll tell me, oh, you know, this is how we view it and this is how the contractors feel. So you have to remember that. And I am, I'm very empathetic to it. And in between my time at Train now and my time at Train before, when I worked there with you, I worked for a very large contractor. So I was fortunate enough to have that experience, both growing up around it, having a family member owning one, and then also working for one of the largest AC contractors in Arizona. I have a pretty well-rounded perspective, and it helps a lot. And I tell my customers, I don't care if you buy $50,000 a year or if you're buying $2 million a year. I know this is your business and I know it's important to you. And so I'm here to take care of you and help you with whatever needs that you have.
Yeah.
Because everybody has something different that they need. But having that understanding and being empathetic is really important. And I think a lot of salespeople lose that. They forget or they just don't know it or don't have that perspective.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, as a result, like, two things happen. A, they have a very difficult time letting go of their agenda, right? I mean, they kind of run the risk of becoming a one-trick pony. But, you know, B, they lose the ability to customize their services. If I'm a small contractor, I've got very different needs than a large contractor. And that could be from a structural standpoint, from a financial standpoint, from a communication standpoint. And having a sales representative, having someone like you come in and say, I'm going to build my activities around your needs, not the other way around, I think really sets a perfect tone for a long-term value-based relationship.
Yes. That's cool. 100%. Yeah. And that is one thing I will say that I appreciate about my leadership and working at Train now. I don't know that I saw it so much in the past, but again, I was more on the retail side of things. Mm-hmm. But my managers do say, they're like, you know, there's a point where, yeah, we want our dealers to grow, but if they grow fast, if they're not ready for that, then we're not helping them the right way. We need to make sure that they're ready to take the steps to do X, Y, and Z, and we need to be there for them with that.
Smart. So, smart advice. Yeah. You just were jogging my memory when you said when we worked together back in the day. That was that was a crazy time. I mean, it was a crazy time in my life on a personal basis. It was a crazy time in business. And when I think, I've got really good memories of that time because I felt like we had big personalities, number one. I mean, we had some characters that we all worked with, right? And for the sake of anonymity, of course, we're not naming names, but it's like there was just a vibe, and you know, it was positive. It felt like we were all kind of quote unquote pulling in the same direction, you know, kind of for lack of a better word. We had a lot of momentum. I mean, did you feel the same way?
Culture, right? You're
culture,
really
speaking
to the culture of the company, and that's huge for us now too. And without culture, without having everybody on the same page and everybody being supportive of each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys were, I mean, I was young. I was just out of college when I started there.
I feel like we were all pretty young.
Yeah. And everybody just rallied around me and just, you know, was so supportive. I had like big brothers that were all working there with me. And a few dads, and everybody just kind of scoop me up and help me. And it's been the same way again. And culture, we talk about that with our customers all the time.
Of course.
It is so important, because if you've got bad culture, it will completely destroy your company.
Yeah.
If you've got a great culture, you have people coming to you, wanting to come work for you. It's not as hard to find the help that you need to help grow your business.
It's inspiring. So, yep. Keep going on that thought though, because I mean, from your experience recently, from our shared experience in the past, do you feel like it was a mix of leadership and people, or primarily leadership? I mean, what do you think makes a culture just so unique in that regard?
Yeah, I think it has to do, I think it starts with the leadership, right? But you've got to be putting all the right people on the bus. And we had some really great team members. Again, coming to work somewhere where everybody was willing to help each other. We're all competitive. All the territory managers are competitive, and everybody, you know, wants to be at the top of that list.
Mm-hmm.
But your success is not my failure, and my success is not yours, right? Because we all have the same opportunity, and we all just pumped each other up. And I just remember everybody was always smiling and laughing and telling jokes. And yeah, it just, we had a great crew that worked there, and everybody got along. But it comes from the top down.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can get, you know, convoluted or broken down if you don't have a strong local leadership leading that team.
That's awesome. That is really, really awesome. And I'm glad to hear that's what you're in right now. That's neat. It was, you know, I think that looking at that group of people and that dynamic, I think the other thing that I'm thinking about, or that I've certainly reflected on, is how far and how successful so many people that were part of that team have become. You know, I mean, leaders in their own right at other companies, or other outstanding sales professionals. I mean, it really did jettison a lot of people into some pretty cool places.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, from, you know, there's quite a few regional managers that are from that team, and DSO leaders and general managers and sales leaders that have all developed. And you know what, Train, they say, you know, promote them up or move them out if they're, you know, not the right fit. But they're really all about promoting up. And my leaders now are like, okay, what do you want to do next? And I'm like, whoa, like, well, I just got in this position, let me do this well. And they're like, right, but we want to go for you, we want to promote you, like, yeah, you know. And I'm like, slow down, let me get good at this. But it's so great to have that support, because that's what train wants to do. And that's what they did back then. So yeah. they haven't lost that. They get it.
Well, they stole my thunder. The kind of what's next for you question was going to be toward the end. But you know what? You won top 10. Let's just jump right to it, right? You won this really, really important award. It's not easy to get. And I'm so happy for you. So let's talk about it for a second. A, how'd you do it, right? What were the key metrics that you really had to crush to win the award? And, you know, after you've reached that point, you're right. Doors start to open and people say, you know, where do you want to go? Or how can we help you get there? So talk a little bit about how you won top 10, first of all.
Honestly, I just came in and I just said, I want to do a really good job at this job. I want to learn it well. I remember being on the contractor side and remembering my manager saying, like, okay, the TMs are not very responsive. We can't ever get any help. We can't get through this phone number or that. You know, I heard that feedback from my own contractor and others in the industry, and that stuck with me. So I knew I needed to be responsive, attentive. If I didn't know something, not to make it up, right, but just let a customer know, hey, I don't know, but I'm going to find out for you. I'm going to find out really quick and get back to you. So doing those things and staying on top of stuff, and really customers just want to be taken care of. They want you to help them solve their problems and stay on top of things. So doing that and developing relationships with my customers, helping them learn to trust me, it took some time. And again, I was still in the position. I really didn't know what I was doing, but I just got really organized, and I lean on my manager and I lean on a few coworkers because, again, I have really great team members, and everybody was just like, call me, send me an email, text me, I will help you. So with all of it, I would even go sit with inside sales for days on end at their desk and just learn from them and how to do different things. And people gave me their time. They were so gracious with their time and their help. So they really helped me succeed. But again, being an attentive territory manager and finding out what your customer needs and following through were just the biggest things that I could possibly do to help be successful. And then on the other end, I brought in over $1 million of new business.
Nice.
So that was a big part of why I won the award.
Okay, so there's like three huge topics there. Let's go in like the backwards order, okay? New business. It's on everybody's lips. And it's the thing that every manager's thinking about. Every TM probably should be thinking about it. And $1 million is a lot. I mean, that is a huge, huge amount of new business to bring in. What was your strategy behind it? How did you implement a plan? Did you really have a focused plan? Were you saying, I am targeting these people for this reason? I mean, what was the thought process behind that achievement?
Well, there was one customer who was bought by an investor. So they had bought 6 companies.
Okay.
And so I knew that they would be my ticket, right? If I could at least get a good amount out of them and help grow them and get them really partnered with Train, that they would at least help me get most of what my plan was for new business.
Okay.
And so that went really, really well. And I was very attentive. I probably spent anywhere from 1 to 2 days every week with them for at least the first 6 months.
How'd you open the door? Did you just walk in and say, hey, I'm Felicia, buy my stuff?
No, I was introduced to them by one of the owners who had been purchased, but they were really, they were interviewing Train, Lennox, Goodman, there are a few others, Carrier, and they were just like, you know, what's the value? And I said, look, if you want to go sell Lennox or you want to go sell Carrier, that's your decision, right? But these are the things that I'm going to do. I don't know what they bring to the table for you, but this is what I can do for you. This is what Train has to offer. These are the trainings. This is how we work with our dealers and help them grow. That is what we do. And they really paid attention to that. And I was fortunate enough to convince them to go a train, and my leadership helped with it too. So I
Sure.
met them through one of the old owners who loved Train, but they're like, look, we've sold some Lennox and we're really partial to Lennox. And I said, okay, if you want to go sell Lennox, go sell Lennox. But I don't know that they're going to give you all of these things. I know what I can provide you. So with that, they were a big part of it, but I brought in some other smaller dealers too. I met them through other people, and then I was fortunate enough because some of the new dealers I brought on really liked me, so they referred me to other companies because, all the owners, they talk to each other, they all know each other. So I was referred.
So you got in and they just started just paying it forward, like just talk to her. That's
Yeah.
awesome.
Yeah,
That's awesome.
it was. But again, I did tell them. I gave everybody my background and I let them know about my history. And because, right, being a female in the industry, they're kind of like, okay. And I'm very feminine. I'm not big on wearing the train polo shirt. I like to wear my dresses and my heels and my full face of makeup. So they kind of look at me like side-eyed, and I'm like, hey, I have a lot of education. I've been in this industry for a long time. I grew up around it. I really do know a little bit. I might be able to help you.
Right, maybe, just maybe.
So yeah, really being empathetic to the smaller guys, because they're like, you know what, Felicia, we've talked to Train before, but a lot of other people will open us up because we're smaller, so Train didn't really give us the opportunity in the past. And we've got to start somewhere. We need help. We've got to sell some sort of product. It's not that we didn't want to sell your product before, but you guys kind of wouldn't allow us yet. So I said, okay, that's fair. And I understand a lot of them had, some preconceived notions on maybe Train's arrogance. And I said, well, yeah, I understand that, and that's the old Train. That's not me. And I would like to work with you. So it worked out, and I helped grow them. And I have one dealer. He's like, this girl. He's like, her and I, we would have these battles. He's like, not angry. He's like, but she'd sit me down and she'd be like, okay, come to this training, work on this marketing. What are you doing next? And he's like, and I just would kind of shake my head. He goes, but she helped me grow. She was right,
That's awesome.
So I always appreciate him when
Well,
he gives me that compliment.
I mean, obviously you're doing so much right with these guys, but that's something too I feel is really unique, and it's a characteristic that not every territory manager has, which is the what's the word I'm looking for? It's not the confidence, right? To sit
Right.
somebody down who might be older, might be a little bit more experienced, might be a little gruffer or whatnot, and say, you need to do this. And it's not really a choice. I want you to do this, right? But to respectfully take control of the relationship and lead them when they need to be led.
Yes. Yeah, and that comes with time, right? And it comes with maturity. When I was with Train before, I wasn't ready to be a territory manager. I wasn't ready to have those conversations. I didn't have that confidence in myself. So, it takes time. And for me, it took 13 years in the industry to get to that point. But yeah, it's not an easy conversation to have, and I still have some where I call my manager. I'm like, can you just call and talk to them? And he's like, no, you can do it.
Anyway, you
So
can just, help a sister out.
yeah.
So let's go back to the other thing you said that I really was paying attention to, and that is the experience at the counter, the experience at the branch. And I mean, such a smart move on your part. I don't think anybody listening to this would disagree that that symbiotic relationship between outside and inside sales teams is incredibly important.
Yes.
And there's a good bit of research out there indicating that difficult branch service can really, really damage a client's loyalty to you or to anybody else out there. So in the
Right.
and yeah, but it's sort of one of those, untapped discussions, so to speak. So having spent a few days there and learning from your crew, listening to those guys, what did you learn from it? Number one, how did it help you become a better outside salesperson? Number two.
They helped me with very specific, like, understanding how to build quotes and things like that. So more of the technical admin part of things.
Yeah.
But it's all stuff I had to do, right?
Sure.
And if I didn't know how to do that, I would spend hours and hours at night doing that stuff, trying to figure it out on my own. So they really helped me tackle those parts of my job that I really needed to know well to be able to do the outside stuff and come home and get the admin stuff done quickly without it taking, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours at night. But I also learned just the whole customer service side of things. They're so great at helping our customers who call in. How do they find matchups using AHRI? The whole quote system, understanding Siebel and those different programs. I don't know if other people work in those, but they just, it was all encompassing, right? And I lean on them a lot because I'm out and about as any other territory manager is. And if I have a dealer who needs pricing or they need a quote put together, I can't do that while I'm driving and I'm going to visit with another customer.
Of course.
So I have to lean on them and I need to have that good relationship with them. So
absolutely.
It was also a really big bonding part of my job too, because I need their help and I can't be successful without them helping me be successful. So
that's neat.
Yeah.
It's a balancing thing, right? I mean, I'd love your perspective on this. It strikes me, based on kind of what you've said so far about the value proposition you're representing, that it's about contractor-based development. You're putting a huge emphasis on work with me because I can help you get where you want to go. How do you strike a balance between getting tied up with administrative things like building a quote? And I don't mean tied up in a bad way because they're very important, but someone says, I need, you know, blankety blankety blank, and I need a quote. How do you make the determination as to take that request inside so you can be more freed up to spend your time on the development topics?
I struggled with this last year. I would spend some days, 6, 7 hours until 11, 12 at night building quotes until I kind of got caught.
Oh, no.
And my managers are like, no, this is for inside sales. You just need to submit it to them. And I was like, well, I don't want to bother them. I don't want to burden them.
Yeah.
I want to do it real quick and figure it out and turn it in and get it turned around to my dealer by 8 a.m. the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of, I was kind of pushed not to do it as much. if there's some that are smaller, it's okay here and there, but they really don't want us in there, right? I'm
sure.
Supposed to be dealer facing and working with my customers directly. So also for me to set that expectation for my customer, hey, you know what? I can't do it all. I can't be working on your quote until midnight. It's not that I don't want to, but I've got to send it to my inside sales team. When do you need it back? Let's set that expectation with inside sales. And if you don't mind being patient with us, maybe a little bit more than you were last year, and we're still going to work with you. Go in the job, you know, if pricing comes back a little bit higher, let's work on that together and we'll figure it out.
Cool.
I want your business. So it's really setting expectations for myself and for them, and just that upfront contract, right?
You bet.
In Sandler sales. So
That's cool. Okay. Last thing you mentioned about top 10, and this is just such great insight, thank you, was about just kind of focus and organization. So I think some people are really locked down their calendar. Some people have calendars and call schedules that are a little bit more flexible based on needs. How have you been managing your time? What do you find to be the best time management strategy that gave you the best customer facing time, but didn't just crush you with paperwork on the back end?
I try to plan my weeks a week ahead of time. So I try to really get my schedule, like I start Monday for next week with the customers that I need to see. I do try to see my top 20% or my TCS dealers at least twice a month. Maybe it'll be more like every 3 weeks, just depending on the customer. But if I can get to their office, you know, twice a month, whether sometimes it's with different people, right? So I go with the owner once a month, and then I go in and train or work with their sales team the second time that month. It's looking at that, understanding where everybody is at and what needs they have, some are more imperative than others. And I have some contractors who are like, look, Felicia, if we can meet for lunch once a quarter, we're good. We can't. We're small. We're one man show. We love you. We'll see you once a quarter.
Yeah.
We're good. And you know how those are.
I try
to plan about a week ahead of time and have my schedule all set up. And then usually the day before I get all my materials, like whether it's sales plans or Excel spreadsheets with their calendarization or where they need to be for their goals, mm-hmm. have those all printed out the day before or, you know, early in the morning before I leave for all of my meetings to make sure I have everybody separated and done that way. So
if you could say these are the three things that really that contributed to my victory, to winning this prize. By the way, where's the trip?
It was in San Francisco. I already went. I went in March.
That's a good city.
Yeah, it was fun. It was so fun.
Where'd you guys stay?
We stayed at the JW Marriott. And the one day, we walked over 30,000 steps because I had a little Fitbit on. And we went everywhere. it was so fun. Yeah.
That's a cool
city. We saw the Full House and Chinatown and Little Italy and Fisherman's Wharf. We even saw a masked guy break into a car and steal a bag out.
Perfect.
I thought I was going to get shot. It was awful.
Perfect.
But yeah, it was crazy.
So what would you say if you're going to duplicate your win, or if you're going to say something to a lot of people listening to this podcast who are doing your job, right? And they're looking at 2017 and they're looking at 2018. And there's a lot of folks that say, I think I'm doing this job, you know, to the best of my ability, but I'm not where I know I want to be. And that can be personally, that can be professionally, financially. I mean, it's all tied together.
I think you have to look at how much effort you really are putting into it, right? Is your whole heart into it? Because I've been in jobs before where I worked really hard, but my heart wasn't into it. And I wasn't succeeding. So really making sure, like, are you really into this job, and making sure that you're spending the time and you have the time management and the organizational skills to accomplish your goals, or at least try to accomplish them. Do what you say you're going to do. Any commitments you make to a customer, fulfill them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And be responsive. That is the biggest thing. They just want you to respond. And when I meet with new dealers, their number one concern is not that the equipment's bad or that people don't want the equipment or that they can't sell it. Their number one complaint has been, I can't get my TM to come work with me. I can't get them to respond. I don't hear from them. I have one guy who cracks up every time. He's like, Felicia, you're the only one who ever calls me. I never hear from any of my other vendors. Nobody calls me.
Wow.
He's like, it's just crazy. He's like, and you take me to lunch. You know? So just paying attention to your customers. It just really, really goes a long way. Because they feel important, and you let them know, like, you're important to me, and it's just very important. It's all about how you make them feel. Mm-hmm. My dad always said to me, people always buy from who they like. He's like, they just do. You can offer them all these other things, but, you know, people will always remember the way you made them feel. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that is really cool. So you mentioned the infamous heating and air conditioning polo uniform.
Yeah.
Right. What? Like, how'd that happen? Like, how? Like, there was a time when, like, men wore ties when they did this job. Not that long ago. When did polo become the unofficial uniform of the territory manager? Right.
Yeah.
And much respect for flying your own flag in that sense. So, you know, this topic, and I would love your perspective on this. So last week or 2 weeks ago, I was doing a business planning class, and like no less than, I would say, 25-30% of the attendees were women business owners or principals or key decision makers. I was in Texas recently, and a huge portion of the territory managers that were in attendance were women salespeople, sales professionals. And so you know, from your standpoint, right? Women in the trades, quote unquote, women in the trades. It's all over the place right now. But women have always been in the trades. And I mean, right. I'm not disparaging the effort, right? But that could be your mom, who's like indirectly in the trades. It could be you, our friend Jamie Savage. I mean, historically, it's not new. So I wanted to get your perspective on that. As a woman in the trades, quote unquote, you know, can you think of specific instances where you've really had to work hard to overcome bias, sexism, a lot of the negative implications that go along with women in the trades?
Yeah, I mean, yes. I even when I managed my program, some of the much older men that worked for me, when they found out about my background and the education that I have, when we would get to talking, I mean, their jaws would drop, and I'm like, okay,
right,
what am I putting off that you're that this is how you think of me? But yeah, I mean, it's not. I'm trying to think of the words. It has been great to be a female in this industry because there aren't a ton of women who are maybe so prominent. Maybe they're more behind, like, they're the admin or they're the customer care representative. But more and more women are being promoted to leadership positions.
Absolutely.
And territory manager positions. And that, I think, is probably what you're touching on, right? They're just more prominently positioned in these companies, and it's great. And I've had to overcome some battles with some men who didn't like it, and that's okay. And you know, if that's how they feel, I mean, that's on them.
If they didn't
like working with me, or they didn't like working with women, then that probably just, for me, it wasn't the right fit.
Yeah.
I needed to be somewhere where I was uplifted by the people that I worked with, whether they were male or female, and it worked out. That's where I landed.
Yeah.
So it can be very difficult, but then it can also give you an advantage because, well, I was just talking about with one of the inside sales guys about this. He goes, if you walk in and then I walk in there with you, he goes, they're going to talk to you. They don't want to talk to me. They're going to talk to you. You're way prettier than me. And I said, well, thank you. But he's like, no, it's true. They want to talk to you. They don't want to talk to me. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, you know, you, as I know you, you are impossible not to like. I mean, smart and energetic and very professional. But I wonder if these old guys, I don't know, I'm not going to have a lady tell me what to do. I mean, I wonder if that's just in part because they have to check their own behavior for the first time in 55 years. And, you know, they suddenly realize that they just can't be the same and kind of, you know, antiquated individual that they were. And now I got to really kind of think about what I say. And, you know, if that's the end game from all this, I'd be perfectly happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And I will say, I mean, I made top 10 last year. This year, Becky Booth, who is another female TM, she's kicking butt. She's at the top of our sales report every single day.
Wow.
I think in Florida, it's either Florida or Dallas. They've got 6 or 7 women TMs.
Yeah.
Out of their, you know, 13 TM sales force, so like half their team, and all of those women are at the top.
That's awesome.
So it seems to be going well, you know.
For sure.
Our major marketing regional director is a female, Amy McDade, and she has so much knowledge, and all of the dealers respond so well to her, and they love working with her. So, you know, I think it's changing.
Me too.
I think it's shifting. People are more accepted, more accepting of and embracing women in the industry. And even when I was hired back on with Train, I remember some of the dealers kind of be like, what? Okay, who are you going to send me? Please don't send me somebody who knows nothing. And then I walked in and they were like, hey, hey, you know, they were very open. And
absolutely.
I didn't really come across anybody who was like, nope, don't want you. You're female. You can't be in here. I didn't come across that. So it was very nice to feel welcome.
The industry has changed so much, not even just from a product standpoint, although that's a big piece of it, clearly. But what I hear you saying, and I think it's really accurate, is that, you know, for a long time being in the trades, you defined yourself because you had a certain technical aptitude, right? I mean, your value to the market was based on the fact that you could fix stuff or install stuff. And so we've been through this shift where we're in this economy that's an idea economy, it's a thinker's economy, it's an intellectual economy. And so regardless of gender or years in the trade, you know, if you look at those two fellas that you mentioned earlier, and I won't say their name, but those two brothers, I mean, that's a great example of what two forward-thinking individuals that value great ideas can do in a very short period of time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Super exciting.
You know, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, if you have the right attitude and you're really focused on the right parts of the market or the right types of marketing and developing the right culture in your company, I mean, they offer to pay 100% medical for their employees.
Wow.
So they just have a really solid stance in the community, and people really rally around them, and they have really risen to the top. So
good for them.
It's well earned.
When I think about somebody objecting to you, I'm not working with you, I'm not working with her. You know, I mean, it's a silly objection. But one of the things I really wanted to ask you was about objections. You know, not to make it kind of an awkward transition, but you know, sometimes when I'm doing coaching with territory managers and we talk about objections, you can see a few people kind of, you know, pinch up their eyebrows a little bit and think about it. And perhaps they have forgotten or they just avoided the fact that as a salesperson, handling objections is, if not the most, one of the key aptitudes, right, as it pertains to advancing your agenda. You know, I mean, if you can't resolve objections, if you can't handle them tactically, you know, you're just less likely to win. I mean, plain and simple. So I wanted to ask you, you know, given your successes recently, what have been some of the most common objections that you have heard, and have you really thought about how you overcome them? Are you naturally good at it? Have you been practicing some skills? What's been working for you when it comes to objections?
I think asking the right questions and just asking questions in general and paying attention to what they're saying, and is what they're saying really what the issue is, or is there something more? So finding out, is it personal? Is it an emotional tie to why they don't want to do something with Train or do business with Train, or, you know, what is it? So getting to the root and really asking those questions. Now, you have to be able to get the time with them, right? And I was fortunate enough, I had one dealer, he's a major carrier dealer, and he just was like, you know, I don't like Train, I don't want to do business with you all. And so I kept asking him questions, and I said, why? And I had found out, you know, in the past, Train rejected him and wouldn't, you know, when he was starting up, wouldn't work with him. And then when he spoke to other TMs in the past, they kind of made him feel like he had to really buy this huge, you know, unattainable amount in his first year, signed up with them. And so, you know, I said, can you just meet with me? Can we just sit down? Can I introduce myself to you? Can I tell you a little bit about myself and my background and what I can provide to you and what Train provides now? And so I finally got him to do it, and I met with him and his partner yesterday, and I mean, we met for 2 hours and we went over everything, and at the end they were like, we would like to work with you. And so I was like, yay, you know, it was great.
Awesome.
But it doesn't always work that way, right? You walk in and they're like, no, we're never going to buy a Train. We're not going to work with you. We don't like you. Okay, well, I'm going to come back next month, okay?
Yeah.
And I think it's going in there and not giving up. And you don't want to go in too often, right?
Yeah.
But still making sure that they know who you are, that you're available. Mm-hmm. And, you know, okay, that's fine. You don't want to work with me this month. You know, maybe something might happen with what X brand you're working with, and you decide, hey, you know, that girl isn't giving up. So maybe I will work with her now.
I love
and
that.
I think people seeing that perseverance, they also appreciate that because that's also making them feel important and like you really want to work with them.
Absolutely.
Dealers love that, right? They mm-hmm. they just want to feel, because they're the king of their company. They want to be made to feel important, but they also need your help. And wow. that's just kind of how it's worked for me.
So is the, you've said this a couple times now that, and I think it's still true that there's a lingering stigma or stereotype that working with your company mm-hmm. is really about me, the contractor, having to bend the knee and kiss the ring.
Right.
And so it sounds like you're still hearing it a little bit, but who cares? You're so persistent. And I think your response, you just said, can we just sit down so I can introduce myself? I mean, okay, there's no risk. There's no pressure. There's no conflict. It's just let me explain to you who I am before you keep shutting the door. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you have to approach it. You know, I went through the whole Sandler training and I think it's great stuff, but they kind of approach it in a way where it's like, well, that's fine. You know, if you don't want to do business with me, then all right. But I feel like if you're a little bit softer about it, and if you go about that approach, but in a way where you're like, hey, I understand that you feel that way, but I would just love the opportunity to meet you. And right. I would love to just be able to tell you what I can do for you. And you may like me. If not, I completely understand and I'll give you my card and I hope you'll call one day. But being very humble, right? Mm. You just got to show that humble and maybe almost a vulnerable side to you, and that you're not there to dictate to them, that you just want to be there as a resource and help them develop and grow their business. But you would love, as a side note, for them to buy your product.
Of course. Yeah, well, absolutely. But I think what I love about you saying, I mean, you and they, everybody at the table knows what the purpose of the meeting is. So you don't have to trot it out. Right. I mean, everybody knows what you're really doing. And so the better move is to, and I'm going to steal your word, to humbly take that servant sales approach to it.
Yes. Yeah.
I couldn't have hoped for a better insight. That's amazing. And the time thing is important too. I mean, your time is scarce as a territory manager. And, at the same time, and I was wondering about this, we both have kids.
Yes.
And okay, so here was my day. I got up, I couldn't sleep. I walked around the house at 1:30 in the morning. I still couldn't sleep. And then I got up at about 4:30. I made coffee, I sat and I read. And then Olivia has some kind of snot, some kind of like sinus infection. Heidi has to go see a patient. I've got a stack of papers on my desk. I'm excited for this podcast, so I'm prepping for the podcast. But then I'll get started on a project. And this happens like every single day, four or five times a day when I'm working from home. I get started on a project. Dad, I'm hungry. Okay, what do you want for breakfast? Toast and syrup. Okay, and Olivia's on this waffles and syrup thing right now. I don't know what's going on. And so then...
Love it.
I know, right. So waffles and syrup, two bites. I'm done. No, eat your waffles. No, I'm done. I want a popsicle. I don't think that's a good idea. And so like suddenly, even though like, you know, the devil on your shoulder says, just give him the popsicle. You got another half hour of uninterrupted work time. So.
Oh, yeah. You're negotiating with Tara.
Oh, my
Absolutely. God. All day long. My six-year-old, he is the product of two successful salespeople. So imagine that. I mean, I'm just like,
you're done. You're doomed.
Yeah.
But how do you balance? Like, how do you, I haven't figured it out yet. And it's tough.
It's difficult. Yeah. I've had days where I've cried and I'm just like, I can't be a really good mom and a really good territory manager. I'm failing somewhere, right?
Yes.
I think that's the pressure that parents, especially, not to discount you, but moms, I think moms really hold that in their heart so true because feel like, I got to do the grocery shopping, I got to clean the house, I got to pack their lunches, I got to get mm-hmm. the clothes, I got to do the laundry, I got to mm-hmm. make sure they're this, and they're here, and they're there, and they're telling their their significant other, okay, I need you over here, and you
yeah.
got all these calendars going on, and oh, I gotta cook dinner, can I do it in the crock pot? Wait, it's too late, I don't have time to get the chicken in the crock pot for dinner, and am I gonna have time to go to Fry's on the way home? So it's difficult, and I also share custody of my son, so
right.
I have him 50% of the time, which is so, it's so important to me, and I was very upfront with my managers at the beginning. I said, look, I can't travel a lot,
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to tell you right now, if you hire me, this is what's important to me. My son is number one.
Yeah.
And so they've been super respectful of that, and
That's
I haven't
awesome.
Had to travel a lot. But it's still hard because I have some customers who will call me at 6 a.m. and as late as, 8:30. I've even had some at 9 or 9:30 when they, equipment's back ordered and they need it the next day, and it's crazy. But you have to set those expectations. You have to set aside time for yourself. And my significant other is constantly telling me, how about you take 15 minutes a day and just go sit in a room by yourself?
Right.
Don't run. Don't do yoga. Don't anything. Just sit there and just make me meditate or pray or something.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself 15 minutes. And it's so hard to
yeah.
find that. But I'm getting better at it, and I try to get my workouts in early in the morning, whether I have to wake up at 4:30 or 5,
mm-hmm.
To get them in before he's up, and
yeah.
I get my son ready for school, and I have help. I have my significant other. And
that makes a difference. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I lean on him a lot, and I'm blessed because my family lives about 2 miles down the road.
Oh, nice.
So my mom's a retired teacher. I call her my nanny, and she helps a lot with everything. But it's a big balance. And
yeah.
The other night I had 4 hours of work, and my son said to me, Mommy, I want to go on a bike ride. I want to go on a bike ride with you. So I said, you know what? That's fine. I'll do my work after he goes to sleep. I'm gonna sleep a little less.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I need to do with my son and for my son. And so
yeah.
you just really have to prioritize it. And I have a coworker. I mean, I went in one day and I was crying because I just felt like I was the meanest mom in the world. And I know my neighbors think I'm crazy because they've heard me screaming at my kid because I lose my patience.
Right.
And he's like, you know what, Felicia? We're not curing cancer. We're selling heating and air conditioning. And at 5 o'clock, he's like, anymore, if any of you call me, you better be asking me for a recipe for a margarita because we're not working.
Yeah.
We need to stop,
Yeah.
So, but give or take, right? There are those days, and
mm-hmm.
I have great leadership team who's like, if you want to go on a field trip with your son, go take the day, go with your son. We know you guys work hard, and they recognize that, they see that. And so they're not micromanagers, which makes it an amazing job to have
yeah.
as a parent, because you can kind of work around that.
Mm.
So everybody's got to kind of find it. And I'm still looking,
yeah.
I still feel like I'm one foot in sand, but I'm trying to figure it out too. And I feel like I'm getting better, but
it's
hard.
It. Yeah.
It's hard. And I'd like another child. So
oh,
how's that going to work?
Yeah.
It freaks me out.
Oh my gosh. Love it.
It freaks me out.
Love
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I work with some of the most unbelievable people in the state of Oklahoma. And if you guys are listening, you know exactly who you are. But as you were just saying, I mean, from a cultural standpoint, they are absolutely incredible in that, when you're working really hard. But when mm-hmm. it's 5 o'clock, you are, it's time to shift gears. It's time to be with family. It's time to go take care of your body. It's time to be with your children and do those activities. And I can't help but think, listening to you, I'm not sure if it's, baked into their culture. It seems to be, but they have got some incredibly talented people that also love what they do,
mm-hmm.
and don't struggle with what we're talking about, which I can only describe as guilt. Like if I'm away from,
mm-hmm.
For days on end, and I leave on a Monday and I come back on a Friday, the dad guilt is stacked up like mega deep.
Right.
It's
yeah.
not easy
yeah.
to balance that. Anyway,
no.
yeah. But much respect, getting up early is not easy either.
It's not, no. But you gotta find your way, right?
And for sure.
If you start working super early in the morning, then maybe you've got more time in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It's a balance. And trying to find that balance. And some days, you know, in the summer, some days you may not get all your work done.
Yeah.
And I've just kind of had to tell myself, you know what, it's okay if I do that email tomorrow.
Right.
It's okay. It's right. going to be okay. My customer's not going to be mad at me. They know I'm going to respond to them because I've set that expectation. It'll be okay.
That's awesome.
And so just being maybe a little forgiving of yourself and just being nicer to yourself about it and not
yeah.
not too hard.
Yeah.
Because I tend to be very hard on myself.
Yeah, I agree. I understand that. Okay, listen, I want to shift gears a little bit. You've given me an hour of your time, and I'm so grateful. You've shared just rock solid practices. So I want to move to our last question, and I like asking people this question, but if you could pick up the phone and if you could call yourself 10 years ago, if you could call Felicia 10 years ago, what advice would you give yourself?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
I would say don't worry so much. Don't care so much what other people think, but just don't worry about everything. Stop being such a worrier. It will come. And, you know, I feel that there's always a plan and it will work out. Whatever is supposed to happen will happen. And just stop fighting every step of the way. And you don't always have to be the very best, because if you give everything you have and you mean your very best, you're going to succeed. So just be kinder to yourself and don't worry so much.
That's awesome.
And don't be afraid. Don't have so much, you know, believe in yourself a bit more.
Yeah, I get it. That's a great perspective. Worry a little less. Man, I want to thank you. I want to thank you very, very much for this interview. Didn't have to do it, but I learned a lot. I think the people listening probably learned a whole lot. So I want to thank you. I want to again congratulate you on a huge, huge win. I'm excited to see what's next.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's such an honor, and I just appreciate it. Thank you.
It's not an honor, but you're very welcome.
It is.
Thank you. We'll be in touch, and I would like to invite you back after we get through the summer to see how things have gone for you this year.
Sure, thank you.
My best to everyone you're working with, and thank you, Felicia. Appreciate your time.
No problem. You're welcome.
All right, bye.
Bye. I never felt so much alive.